Blog Talk Radio.
Hello and welcome to Cathode Ray Mission. I'm your host, Adam Ferens, and tonight the topic of our discussion is the HBO miniseries Chernobyl, which premiered in 2019 and is about the nuclear plant disaster of 1986. Joining me tonight for the discussion are Aaron White. Say hello.
Hello.
Hugh Kenneth David, say hello.
Hello.
And Perry Seibert, say hello.
Hello, comrades.
we were also supposed to be joined by Cindy Collins-Smith, but unfortunately she was not able to join us tonight. However, we do have some notes of hers that we will pass along when the time is appropriate. So she'll be here in spirit, if not in fact. So I will start with you, Aaron. And the question is, as always, how did we first come to Chernobyl?
Gosh, this was one of the this was that monster year for miniseries, right?
Yeah, like 2018, 2019.
Fosse Verdon, When They See Us, and somehow this one, I mean, by great reason, but this one ended up kind of coming out of the season kind of head and shoulders above the rest come award season. And so that caught my attention, knowing that it was a very particularly strong season and that this one just kind of turned into the monster.
Yeah, there's like three or four that season that are like all-time shows.
For sure. And I don't have HBO, so I had to wait for it to come out. That was 2019, right?
Yep.
I'm thinking, yeah. And so, like, you know, COVID happened, and we were all at home for a really long time. And I was like, you know what? I'm going to catch up on this show. And I watched it in, like, half a day because it was just so compelling that I couldn't stop watching it. So that's how I came to it.
Yeah, I ended up watching it myself when it very first aired. Now, I didn't watch it live. I don't think other than a couple of moments of sporting events or some award shows over the years, I am not sure that I've watched much live in literally decades at this point. I was time shifting before that was even a phrase. I mean, this goes back to, you know, the early 2000s, late 90s, when I would record stuff and watch things at my convenience. So I do remember that I would watch this usually within a day or two. And, man, oh, man, I remember thinking after that first episode, shit, I should wait. But I just couldn't. I couldn't wait another 4 or 5 weeks for the whole thing to be over and watch it all at once. So I watched it week to week within a day or two. And, yeah, it was extraordinary. So what about you, Hugh? How did you come to this one?
Funnily enough, what now feels like an old-fashioned way, so ads, reviews, word of mouth. I like you guys say, it was a big year. There was a lot on. I also was, oh my God, 2019. Yeah, so that was the first year I was on antidepressants as well. And so I hadn't watched or read anything in a while. I was still coping. My brain was still adjusting. And weirdly, this was my way back in to a number of things. There was just something about it that cut through the BS of things that were, and it allowed me to kind of connect again to the art I love and the media I love, but also to cope with my own emotions, which was kind of a weird thing to discover these things did for me. So yeah, it was just old-fashioned way. I don't have Sky here in England, but we did pay at the time for Sky, what used to be a Sky subsidiary called Now TV, which is a digital app, and they had it very prominently, so I had no trouble just watching the episodes all in one go the moment they were available.
Yeah. I think we've all done that with shows we really love, and I know that when I revisited this show, I definitely did it in like one go too, just like Aaron did.
Mm.
But yeah, getting to see it week to week was an experience, wasn't it? So finally, to you, Perry, how did you come to this?
So I remember when it came out, and I did not. I was also not an HBO subscriber at the time, and thought I got to get to this. If for no other reason, you could have told me it was the worst thing on the planet. I would still watch 5 hours of Jared Harris, Stellan Skarsgård, and Emily Watson do just about anything. So I was after
yeah.
they had me at go, right? And then when I subscribed to HBO Max, which I did last year, I must have made like a 70 title my list of things to get to, and Chernobyl was absolutely on it. And thank God you asked me to do this, that you were going to do this show. I'm like, yes, please let me do this, because it'll be a reason to sit down and actually watch the thing finally. So I am fresh from that. I just watched the last episode last night, and I watched it about the last week and a half. So this is fresh with me, and I'm super excited to talk about it.
Oh yeah, no, it's a great one. But now, if you haven't, you need to watch The Wire.
I have watched The Wire.
I've watched
The Sopranos. I've watched a lot of.
But have you watched Tremé?
So it got away from me. I need to watch Tremé.
Good. You do need to see Tremé. Okay. So
yeah.
Now I'll go to Hugh to start this one. And the question here is, do the changes from history here, because there are changes in history, and we've talked about this before, do they prevent or aid the drama on screen?
This is kind of interesting. My own podcast, which I mentioned occasionally here on Cathedra, which is Real History, that was our opening episode, our pilot episode, basically. So did something of a deep dive on it. I think my opinions over the last few years haven't necessarily changed. I still feel that it is a very, very effective piece of historical drama. I feel like a distinct effort was made to convey the mood of history and the sequence of events, the chronology, some of the emotions, but in the end, it is still drama. The primary function is not necessarily to educate but to entertain, and it does that in spades. Also, it has a distinct perspective in being a Western-made drama about something that happened behind the Iron Curtain. And, you know, as history, I would be very interested in seeing, regardless of bias, I would be very interested in seeing a Russian-made production on it. Just because.
Yeah,
I know that's highly unlikely at this day and age that it would be, you know, as, you know, that will be biased in its own way, but it would still be interesting to see how they would approach the drama.
And I think this is somewhere where we can put one of Cindy's first comments. She said that she wanted to bring up about history, because she seemed to be very impressed with the history, as I was too.
Mm-hmm.
Despite the changes, I think that honestly the changes here to history are much more effective and much less bothersome than, say, the changes in Band of Brothers, where they actually got the history wrong in places, and it was not something that was hard to do. It was actually really easy for them to do that, and or rather, it should have been really easy to correct it, because you had to almost go out of your way to get it wrong. But what Cindy had said was, the title of the final episode, and I want to make sure I'm pronouncing this right, is Vishnaya Pamyat, which, according to her, is the Ukrainian translation of Memory Eternal, which was sung during the Orthodox funeral service. And she wanted to talk about how, you know, it's interesting that they chose that, particularly being that Russia has the official stance that the Ukraine doesn't now and never has existed, and given everything that's going on in the world now, and that this is not anything new, and especially, say, back 3-4 years ago when some things were going off even then, that they decided to put this in. So that's something else interesting. Also, she did want to say that the radiation sickness, the stuff with the radiation sickness is really... it's both really good but also a little dramatized. There was a professor called, I believe his name was, Robert Gale, who was an American that went to Moscow to help oversee the treatment of some of the patients that were coming in. And this, of course, flies in the face of some of what the show said, which was that Russia largely locked out the outside world, which, true, not a lot of people went in, but still there were more people allowed to come in and help than the show demonstrated. But at the same time, like you were just saying, Hugh, I do think that it ends up working better as drama, but it also, you know, cuts to the point that this is really about how cover-ups not only can't continue, but cover-ups also always backfire.
Yeah, I mean,
the truth needs to come out.
Yeah, I think the point about outside help is really interesting because, you know, we are so used to, if you look at other nuclear disaster films, and again, you know, I know you've got that question coming up, but from a history point of view, I just want to say that I think there's a tradition of telling these dramas as very focused and claustrophobic experiences for the viewer, because we are not there at the time to experience the looming threat. And so there's a history of that in this kind of sub-genre, which, if we bring in the outsiders, not only opens it up, and because as it is, this miniseries manages to cover a lot of geographical ground, but we never feel like we're going too far outside or away from Chernobyl itself, which is crucial to our understanding of what's happening and our emotional sense of what's happening. You know, if you'd done this as a Hollywood feature, I think you'd almost certainly have to have that American as your lead character going in to help and seeing it all from his point of view, and that, you know, he'd be the one saying, you've got to do this the right way, you're doing it wrong, and all this kind of thing, right? Instead, I think it's far more interesting that they've chosen to take what, for a lot of Western audiences, is a very foreign viewpoint.
It's also interesting that,
crucial,
you know, you have a British-American co-production
very much so.
that managed to avoid the, as you said, the Hollywood problem of forcing a strictly American point of view.
Absolutely. I mean, that's not to say it doesn't have that. It does have that, but it's much more subtle, much more contained at the service of a drama that takes its cues from, as you pointed out with Cindy's comment, you know, local culture is... And cultural ideas are embedded into the show and the drama, into the production itself.
So, now to you, Perry, how do you feel about the history versus drama here?
So I have grown more and more of a stickler for this as I get older and older, and it's really simple. If this were a real story, they'd be speaking Russian. So I don't really care. Like, I don't care if it's historically accurate
or not. It's not a documentary.
As long as it works, and boy, does this work. So I guess the only real answer to that question is, I don't know until you show me the version of it that is strictly by the facts and in Russian. Then maybe I'll have an opinion on this that matters. This works beautifully. I don't feel like, you know, I know nothing. I knew very little. I mean, I remember it happening, but I didn't. I didn't follow it with great care. I was a wonderful student who hated every science class I was ever in at any level ever. So it's like I got that scene in the first episode when he's explaining to Skarsgård how a nuclear power plant works. Even I'm lost. I'm like, okay, whatever. I'm just gonna go with this. So, and it's fine. And I was fine to go with it. And I'll be real clear. Science is super important. I'm glad people do it. I believe in it. I just don't understand it. My brain doesn't go there. I'm real clear about that. So I'm good.
Yeah, for me, and I have to say, I was always one of those guys who, when it comes to certain aspects of science, particularly when you get into the really super high-level math, that literally a very select group of people even can accomplish, that's where you lose me. But for me, even when I struggle to understand some of the deeper concepts, and I think we'll all, and when I say struggle, I mean, you know, when it's just such a vast thing and you do need some more practical grounding to really get it, I actually kind of strike a balance between you and your total going away from it and, you know, totally digging it. As long as it doesn't get too technical, I'm fine. When it's more explaining broad concepts, I really kind of groove to it and always have. And I think for me, that's why the science here kind of went down, because I thought pretty well, because I thought that they did a really good job of explaining it in such a way, or at least the broad strokes, that a general audience could get it. But I can definitely see how, you know, others may not have that same reaction. So what about you, Aaron? How do you feel about this? Oh, sorry, go on if you have a response.
Well, I just want to say with the coup, the dramatic, like, screenwriting coup that this pulls off is that they give you, like, just enough of it in those early episodes to stay with it so that when he gives the explanation that is, you know, nuclear meltdown reactions for dummies at the end, that's brilliant. Like, anybody can follow that and be fascinated by that. That's a fantastic piece of writing and you know, theatrical.
It also helps that you have these actors pulling that off, because, as you said, Harris Skarsgård and, you know,
Jared Harris.
God, her name just...
Yep. Emily Watson.
I almost said Emma Watson, and I was like, it's not the chick from Harry Potter, it's the other one.
But they would make great sisters.
Too many Emilys and Emmas.
too many E. Watsons. Too many E. Watsons in the London Directory. But yes, so what about you, Aaron? How do you feel about the changes from history versus the drama here?
Well, none of it bothers me at all. There's so much we don't know, first of all. I think we should keep that on the table, because Soviet records are notoriously A, uncomprehensive, and B, unreliable. So, like, here we are 36 years after the fact. We'll never know the whole story until somebody decides to tell a comprehensive story about what happened. And even then it won't be comprehensive, because then it will be just like one or two people's perspectives. So, we talked about this a little bit with Band of Brothers and with the Pacific. At the end of the day, a series like this has to work as a drama. The goal is to be honorific to the heroes and to the victims of a tragedy like this. But aside from getting their stories right, it has to be emotionally true, and it has to be entertaining, or for lack of a better word. It has to work as drama.
It does.
I really like Hugh's point about, wanting to see a Russian version, but I will one-up that and say I would like to see a Ukrainian version. I would love to see the Ukrainians tell their own side of, because this is just another step in Russian colonization of Ukraine. And so they could really, like, this is like the modern, until this war that's currently happening, was like the modern example of Russian colonization. And I think that it could be a really interesting piece for somebody to do.
No, it really, really would. Now, this question kind of follows on, and I will go with you, Perry. Maybe you're the wrong person to ask because you just said this, but does this feel like good, terrible, bad, or great history? And I know that kind of, you know, ties in, or maybe we've kind of answered that with the last question, but I think there's a subtle differentiation here that I just want, you know, kind of our opinion, quick opinion. Ultimately, do we feel like the history here is good, bad, terrible, or great?
Sure. I mean, again, I'm no historian, but I have the, you know, with the knowledge that this has been around for 3 years, it seems good. So I'm not going to question this. This seems like pretty good history. And I will go to the macro of, I'm not even talking about if it's factual to everything here. It's a pretty great snapshot of the end of the Soviet Union, right? I mean, it just allegorically is that, which they admit it's what it is at the end by quoting Gorbachev saying exactly that. It's spectacular history in that capacity.
No, you know, I think that's when you have dramas that can point something out in history, that's when it goes from, you know, even if they get some of the facts a little fudged here or there for drama, you can watch a documentary, but as Aaron said about emotional truth, if you get the emotional truth, then I think that serves history well, ultimately.
Definitely.
But so what about you, Aaron? What how do you feel on this as history?
I think it's as good of history as we've ever seen in television. I mean, again, like, you have to disregard factual playing with facts, playing with locations from time to time in a drama. You have to. So just that being said, and I will say this, I realize I'm the only person on this panel tonight that was not alive for the actual incident. So I have no actual functioning memory of this event.
Yeah, I just remember seeing, I was young, so I just remember seeing, you know, smoke on TV and people saying, oh, yeah, that place in Russia blew up. Oh, my God, what's going to happen to the rest of the world now?
So,
nice young man flex there, Aaron. That was strong.
Right. Well, I got called old at school today, so, I had to basically brag that I wasn't 13. So,
well, you know, that's
I
funny is when I got called. I got called old at school a few weeks back, and it was so funny because the student said, "Well, what are you? Aren't you like 25 or something?" And I was like, "Oh, bless you, child." They think that's
yes,
old.
Yes,
oh,
I am.
God. But yeah, Hugh, how about you? What do you think of this as history?
I mean, given what we were saying earlier, I think ultimately, I think Aaron's right on this one. I think it's the best we've seen on television in a very long time. I don't think I've seen a film or TV series before or since that quite does it the way it was done. And I think your point earlier about it being a partially European production is a big part of that. I think looking at what it's the relevance, you know, this is art, you know, this is being written and produced at a time where the themes are as relevant to those of us watching it as it was to the people living it at the time. You know, for my own part, you know, I was a teenager at the time. I was living in Switzerland. We were incredibly concerned in Switzerland. There was serious concern that the fallout cloud was going to, you know, affect the air we breathe and what was going to happen to us. And so because in Switzerland it's mandatory to have nuclear shelter bunkers built into as effectively as your cellars in homes and workplaces, there was consideration as to whether we'd have to use it or not. And so we were talking about this at school. The weather report literally was showing you where the cloud was going. In the end, I think we were quite lucky. It skirted the edge of the mountains. I think if memory serves, you know, we may or may not have lost some sheep, basically, you know, minor tragedy, relatively speaking. But it was real. It was actual. It was, you know, with salt too, and, you know, actual history happening around us. It was a very intense moment. And particularly since pre-internet, we were having to use traditional news media to understand what was happening, and obviously information was coming out in dribs and drabs, and there was only so much going on that could be reported through the Iron Curtain, so to speak. So, in that sense, I feel like the series did an unbelievable job. It cast me back to the moment, but it also made me feel like I was being given a ringside seat on the event, and when we come to talk about why this series works, I want to get into it a bit more then, because I think a huge amount of why this series works comes down to the directorial choices as well as the writer, but we'll come to that later.
Oh yeah, and now we come to that question that we always ask, and that is, what are the themes here? And I'll go to you, Aaron. What are the themes in this series?
That real life, everyday ordinary people are always the victims when governments shut their mouth on what they screwed up. There's never a time that a government denies wrongdoing that somebody who is just an ordinary human being doesn't pay the price. And that's true in the Soviet Union, that's true in the United States, it's true everywhere around the world. And it we have to, you know, I'll stop it before I start preaching.
Hugh, what about you? What do you think the major theme or themes are here?
I mean, this is weird because we're doing something so recent that we know what the creators thought the themes were, which is kind of interesting. It's been a while since we've done that here, I feel, on the cast. But what do I feel personally? I think it's slightly different, because Mazin felt that when he wrote it, he was very much considering the issue of cover-ups and the issue of fake news and reporting and how information gets out and the damage it creates. Aaron's point is really interesting, really interesting. I think on the flip side of this, and I think this is something that this drama has in common with another Soviet story, but told by a co-production movie, in that it's very interesting that I think the ordinary people are shown to be the victims, they're also shown to be, in the end, the heroes. You know, if the miners don't volunteer and come in, you know, nothing happens the way it needs to be. They're the ones who make the choice, and they make that choice with full knowledge, at least in this dramatized version. You know, the look on their faces, the choices. It's practically a Walter Hill moment, you know? Very manly moment where they're like, yep, well, you guys aren't going to do it. We're going to do this because no one else can do this. And the risk is, they know what the risk is, you know? And they take it. And I think that's the plus side, because when you're talking about Russia and you're talking about Russia's history and you're talking about, you know, the what Russia was and then became and what it did to the ideology of the place, but also the, what it did to the people raised under that ideology. You know, I feel like it's really interesting that when we, as Westerns, when we look at these stories and we tell them, the heroism is obviously embedded very much in the ordinary person. And actually, you know what? That's completely justified, you know, given the concerns the officials had, given the politics that they played with each other, the politics of the small PP, you know, I think very, and given that what we see there is a very Russian version of typical arse covering, you know, by managers, which is, you know, absolutely relevant to now. You know, that's,
yeah, you
that,
know,
that's
it's funny how sometimes you see recent history covered, and then not long after it becomes even more relevant than before.
Precisely. I mean, considering it came out in 2019, it just felt on the nose, you know, bang.
Yeah. I'm trying to think of another time this has happened quite on this level, and you know, I can think of a few other times, but yeah, this is a really, really big one.
I have to go
back and think a bit. So what about your take on this, Perry? You, how do you feel about the themes here?
I will give you my funny answer first. Which is, I'm kind of serious, but it's a funny answer, right? It's obviously, don't build with cheap materials, right? That's the first lesson.
No.
It's just a good, solid real estate lesson. And I'm not
Three Little Pigs.
But and absolutely agreeing with everything that's already been said. That's I agree with all the major things. And what I thought about during it, which is something that I keep returning to, and again, it's interesting. I like that we've talked so much about how young Aaron is. I like the fact that it made me think about the difference between, and I tend to be really careful when I'm talking about this period, growing up, you know, at the end of the dying end of the Cold War, and in the height of, you know, nuclear fears in the early 80s as a little kid.
Oh yeah.
So for me, it's a wonderful reminder of the difference between Russia and the Soviet Union. These are two very different things. And I think I am curious how much that's lost on people, not only my age, but younger than me. Like, to understand what that system was and why it now was and could not last, which is why I said that's why I really like I really like this as a piece of history showing why that system couldn't have possibly lasted.
Yeah, you know, the thing is now Aaron's a little different from other people that are around the same age as him. But I've talked to people that are of a similar age, and they totally are like, wait, this was a thing when I was a kid and I didn't know about it. And you talk to people that maybe are just a little younger than Aaron, and they're maybe totally unaware of, you know, how different the world was, say, by 1995, as opposed to what it was in 85 or 86. The world really did change a lot between, say, Chernobyl and the fall of the Berlin Wall. Those next, you know, 4 or 5 years were just an extraordinary change, and the world really didn't have another pivotal change until 9/11.
True.
So you know, it is interesting to see the response here, because, you know, I'm a little older than Aaron, you're a little older than me, and I think Hugh is probably around the same age as you. So you know, we've got a pretty decent cross section of people who either lived through this as teens, or went through it as kids, or came to it, you know, with knowledge of recent history. But I think the fact that we all had a similar response should tell you that there's an emotional truth in this series that rises above anything else, and that for me is a really important accomplishment here. Now I will go to I will go back to you, Hugh, and I will
mm-hmm.
ask this question. Did you learn anything while you were watching this that you were unaware of regarding it? Did this series teach you anything?
There's a couple of things I knew were already there for dramatic effects rather than being historically accurate. So it was interesting to come across those. But I think ultimately the most important thing for me was, and funnily enough, I've just been teaching this in history to 11 and 12 years, so it's funny it comes up, but the chronology, the sequence of events, the timing, the who said what when, roughly speaking, in the process of everything going wrong. That is fascinating and horrifying in equal measures. I was aware from other dramas that there were issues with build and suits, and also from history, because I've had to teach the Cold War more than once in my career, and it's on the syllabus of the school I'm in. So it is kind of weird that we don't do Chernobyl very much. It very much fits locked in under, you know, the whole business of Gorbachev, and it's almost a sidebar to Salt too, but we do, you know, with A level, where we do a much bigger unit on Russia, we expect the boys to go and do, we expect them to read around the subject and watch around the subject. And so one of the things I'm doing at the moment is establishing a library of film and TV content at the school that they should be looking at. And obviously, Chernobyl's going on the list, because I think the point you guys made earlier about, I think it was you, Aaron, who made the point about the way, or maybe it was you, Perry, I'm not sure, the whole business about the era, the time period, the way that the understanding of corners cut, which now in the West seems terribly familiar, shall we say, but obviously, you know, there was a sense of Western superiority at the time. You know, we build better, we do better, but actually that whole, everything felt unbelievably familiar to a modern audience, and I think that I wasn't expecting. Rather than learning something factual, I think it was more the sense of how familiar everything seemed in a Western context. I don't know how much
so
of that
maybe
being designed for us.
No, it just occurs to me what you said there, maybe, and it makes me think maybe ultimately the lesson of this show is conservative governments will always cheap and fuck you over, no matter what.
I think the other thing I thought was interesting was the sense that you can't beat the recreation of the site itself. And I think that was quite stunning. There's something I'm always fascinated by architecture behind the Iron Curtain and design and the sort of the movements and the builds over the years. And so to see a visual representation of the local area, but also the plant itself, and then to see what happens to it, that was like nothing I've seen before. Even when you think about disaster movies, as we've done elsewhere, it was like nothing I've seen before, and it was unbelievably well done. So I think that was a weird kind of learning thing, in the sense of this is what it must have been like to be right there and to have these things happening.
Yeah. So, Perry, what about you? Did you learn anything while you were watching this?
I mean, yeah. This is a tricky question, because back to the first question, I don't know what they made up and what's fact. I'm assuming most of it's fact, so I'm going to feel comfortable saying I didn't know. I certainly, if I knew it, I'd forgotten it, and I certainly never had it manifested in two actual people. Like, the thought of the two guys who had to run the test, like, that's just horrifying and fascinating. And a fantastic piece of work within the production to put me there, to give me those two people, and to actually put some flesh on them while not making them the center of anything other than that. All kinds of things. Sure. I mean, you know, I learned how nuclear reactors melt down. Great. I mean, I can't retain it, but I kind of understand now, and that's really good. And you know, I learned that, or I was reminded, rather, that for all, you can throw all the technical jargon you want at me, but when it comes right down to it, you can just make guys watching a readout of numbers go real, real low, then real, real high, real, real scary. That's really good. Yeah.
Well, it worked for Star Trek, didn't it?
Exactly. It'll always work. It's nice to be reminded of it.
And it worked on all those submarine movies where you see the dials going up and down, and Ed Harris made a career of lowering
the screen. Panic at that,
yeah.
Over dust.
It worked in Aliens when they're just yelling 100 meters
that
alien is away.
Yep. Well, you know, actually, you know, that's a good point. You just mentioned Alien, but, you know, that beeping when the aliens are approaching in Aliens might actually be the scariest part in the whole movie, you know, that anticipation.
Yep.
So,
it's funny,
what about
it's funny
you,
you
Aaron?
Mentioned Dust Boot as well.
Oh, yeah, no, Dust Boot, Dust Boot is great. You know, it's too bad that we lost Wolfgang Petersen recently, because I always had a real spot for him. You know, I know people like to say, oh, he was just an action director, but he did so much. I mean, you know, Dust
Boot.
Apparently
he felt Cameron nicked a lot of the visualizations that were for creating pressure from Dust Boot for Aliens, which is one of the reasons he went off and did Enemy Mine. He was like, I can do this. If he can do it, I can do it.
I actually grew up liking Alien Mine. You know, I thought that was actually a neat movie. And, of course, you know, it had two pretty damn fine actors in it, so that doesn't hurt. But what about you, Aaron? What did you learn here, if anything?
I'm going to admit to something incredibly embarrassing. Growing up, when we talked about Chernobyl, it was always in the Soviet Union. That was it, right? And so I actually learned from this that Chernobyl was in Ukraine and not Russia. I had never known that, never thought about the fact that the freaking Soviet Union was a quarter of the globe. It was a, people forget now just how huge it was, how many countries it entailed. And it literally took up a quarter of the landmass on Earth. And it was just, I still, when I'm not really thinking, think of the Soviet Union and Russia as the same, but they're not. And yeah, that's my embarrassing admission.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, you know, I'm not sure if I was reminded of it or if I didn't know that, but yeah, that fact was interesting to at least be reminded of. Now, what, you know, for me, I knew people had gone in and done some work there, but I hadn't realized the conditions, you know, the complete lack of proper attire they had when they went and did some of that cleanup. And seeing that dramatized was quite eye-opening. Of course, you know, that's part of where the aftermath of that is part of where the series fudges history a bit, because they act like all those guys immediately died. You know, the guys that went into the water, they actually all lived quite long after, and largely had minimal problems, believe it or not, despite great risk of exposure. But you know, it still makes for fine drama, and the danger and the sacrifice that they went through, the potential sacrifice, was no lesser. Now, I will take this one to you, Aaron, and I'll ask you this. how does this compare to other nuclear disaster films that you've seen?
Well, it certainly feels more realistic. It's a really broad genre because, I mean, do you count something like Doctor Strangelove, which certainly is the ultimate nuclear disaster? It's a really huge subgenre of the disaster film. And within it, you have things like this that are very serious, truly disaster. You have post-apocalyptic. You have things like Doctor Strangelove that just like force you to stare into the void and laugh before it stares back, as Nietzsche would say. But you know, this stands pretty much. I would say it stands maybe a little below something like Dr. Strangelove, but it's top tier within what it's doing. And as far as like serious nuclear, like truly investigating the fallout, for lack of a better word, of actual nuclear disaster, I would say that it stands alone.
Yeah, you know, the thing is you know, it's different from something like, say, Watkins' War Game or Threads. And, you know, Strangelove is just a remarkable film on so many levels, and it's hard to compare. But, no, it is really in terms of a serious treatment of an historic incident of this level. It pretty much is its own thing, at least for me. So what about you, Hugh?
So the one I was referring to earlier, but I avoided mentioning the name of, but this has, getting ready for this podcast has reminded me of, is K-19 The Widowmaker.
Oh!
Captain Bigelow by Christopher Kyle. Right? I feel
that
like...
That's a good movie.
Yeah. And it's a hugely underrated movie, very good. The problem is most people who have reported it as not being very good went in wanting an action like The Hunt for October. What they weren't expecting was effectively a meltdown disaster movie, which is what it is. And it's a great piece of history, and it's got fantastic actors doing a really good job. And again, it's about the ordinary workers. It's about the cheaping out by, you know, by the Soviet Union on its builds and the submarine. You know, that horrifying sequence, which is the only thing I can compare some of the scenes in Chernobyl with, where the naval soldiers are having to go in and out of the main nuclear section of the submarine wearing protective clothing that is not going to protect them in the slightest, and they're having to convince them to wear it and go in, and it is just absolutely horrifying and agonizing to watch, because you know that
it's a great movie. It really is. I saw it in the theater, and I couldn't believe that people were knocking it. I couldn't believe people were knocking it, and you know, people were saying, "Oh, the Russian accents are bad," and I'm like, really? I remember, you know, people complaining. I mean, but people will complain about anything. People complain that none of the Russian accents in what was that, in the fourth Indiana Jones film were right, and they were especially complaining about, you know, the characters played by Russian actors. So that makes a lot of sense. So people will complain about damn anything.
Yeah, exactly. But, yeah, I feel like there's and that's where I saw the thematic commonality about making it showing the ordinary people to be the victims, but also the heroes, you know, as the issue of, you know, the Soviet Union creating its own disasters through its desire to save money. The way the politics trumps the science. You know, that's all there in that. So I think it's very interestingly comparable to that. But it's not quite sui generis, but it's getting there. Do you know what I mean? I mean, it really does stand as a miniseries, like head and shoulders above almost anything I've seen. I think it's a remarkable piece, and I think it sets the standard for the future.
Oh no, it's very, very high on my list. It's not quite top 100. It's just outside the top 100, but that is, as I've always mentioned, a work in progress. I think I have it. I'd have to double check the list right now. I think I've got it at around 107 or something like that. So it's very, very high. It could end up right there, but yeah, it's one of the best ever for me. But that kind of jumps into the one of the final questions, and we'll get to that later. But what about you, Perry? How do you feel about this?
I'm going to answer this sideways on you. So I'm not drawn to horror films. We've talked about this, I think, over the years. There are horror films I love, but I don't seek them out. It's not something I don't scare easily. What frightens me in a movie is systems failing because of human error and stupidity. That's scary. So, and the best example of it I've seen in the last few years is actually Ken Burns' documentary on the Vietnam War. Like, I spent like 3 hours just wanting to throw up. Right? It's like, and that's that.
Did you happen to watch the unedited version of that? Because the unedited version is a tough watch. Yeah.
Yeah, and it's got nothing to do with what you see. Like, I'm not talking about the footage. I'm talking about this perfectly drawn portrait of a system failing out of stupidity and greed and bullheadedness, and what it's going to cost people who had no choice in the matter. It's horrifying. I had that exact same feeling throughout the first 2 hours of this. So I don't know how it ranks as far as I don't care to rank it as far as nuclear disaster, because I really don't think of it as a nuclear disaster thing. It is, but I don't think of it that way. It's a horror film, and it's a spectacular piece of horror filmmaking and writing.
As opposed to the new Andrew Dominik film, which is basically a horror film, but is not exactly a success, except for Under Armas. But let's not go there. Real life disasters, man-made errors are always more frightening than, you know, say a vampire or a killer with a knife.
Well, the great example is for me is like the shark in Jaws doesn't scare me. The mayor scares me. Okay.
Yeah.
That's the distinction.
Yeah. And honestly, I think even Spielberg would say that's what he really wanted. He wanted you to get excited by the shark. But he wanted the mayor to be a scary guy because, you know, none of that shit would have happened if human beings hadn't been idiots. So now I'm going to turn to you again, Hugh, and ask this question. Which scene or episode for you was the most memorable here? Which one really stands out for you the most?
So I've got three scenes rather than episodes. There's the camera pullback to show the missing core, is just absolutely.
Yeah.
I mean, there's the horror, Perry, right there, right? That's just literally one of the most horrific things I've ever seen put on film. I was just like heart in mouth, but also I knew I was going to watch the rest of this show. Do you know what I mean? It was like the moment where I was all in. I was like, oh my god, I'm going to watch this entire thing because
how far in is that? Maybe 10-15 minutes.
Yeah, right. And then the next one for me was then the Skarsgård and Harris watching the helicopters. trying to come in, and the one that loses control and goes. And I was just, and I, there was a side of me that was thinking, oh yeah, the CG doesn't look that great. Oh, okay. And then it all goes horribly wrong, and I was just like, I don't care about CG. I was just like, that's horrible, that's terrible. You know, this is just getting worse. And then finally, it's the scene where they go to recruit the miners. Just that bit of dialogue, that little bit of space away from the main event, and we're somewhere else, and it's a different place, a different mood, and a lot, and at this point, you're desperate for somebody to do something that works. You're desperate for somebody to make a stand and step up. And that
can I just say that guy that played the leader of the miners, he had a small but pivotal part, and man, did he! If I remember, I think he's actually an English actor, but I have to double check. I know I've seen him in some other things, but man, did he make an impression with his role.
Yeah, that was such a great moment. I mean, that's again, you know, this business of making the ordinary people, that was the bit that made me think of, look, they're going to be the heroes too, and that puts the film, it is a miniseries, because it is designed to be episodic, but it is as good as any film, if not better, and that scene is, that puts it up there, not just with the Widowmaker, that's with Enemy at the Gates, that's with any of these, you know, these takes on Russian working class culture as it's evolved under communism, and how these people therefore have a greater respect for, you know, they are cynical about their governments, but they are still people who have a community, who pull together, who recognize sacrifice and what it means. And I think that was remarkable. So yeah, those three for me are probably, those are the things I always remember. When someone says to me, what, you know, Chernobyl, the miniseries, those are the three that come back.
Yeah. Yeah. And, you know, I mean, it's a five, maybe a little more than 5 hour series. And there's so much, you know. Now for me, I've kind of mentioned it, but, you know, the I'm glad you mentioned the helicopters, because that's one. Another one is just clearing off the roof. I'll never forget that. It's amazing, but this is where I'm going to have to say Cindy and I are pretty much in lockstep here. It's too bad she wasn't able to join us, but she has a tie for her favorite episode, and so do I. And it's episodes 2 and 5, and those episodes are, you know, those are tough watches, especially 5 and 5, because you've gotten to know these characters and their situations, and Harris, of course, gives a great performance in that one. It's just fantastic. But again, that's getting ahead a little bit. So how about you, Perry? You there?
If I'm picking favorite episodes, right, you want episodes.
Episode or scene. Which one was the most memorable and your favorite? Yeah.
I think the first 2 hours of this is just unimpeachably brilliant. I will take the first two episodes if I've got to actually rank the episodes, and the last one's spectacular. They're all great. This is a conversation starter. This is not ranking in any capacity.
It's all caviar, but which caviar do you prefer?
Right. Exactly. That it opens with the explosion is so great. I was like, oh, good. Okay, we're going to go. All right, I'm in. All right. We're not going to spend a lot of time learning anything. We're just going to go into this. All right, I'm into it. And then within, 10, 15 minutes, we're in that bunker, man, where they bring all the Soviets in. And just the nightmare begins. That's when my stomach started to go, oh, God, I'm going to throw up. Oh, this is awful. This is everything I don't want. Oh, this is so bad. And then you think it's going to be okay, and then the old school apparatchik speaks up, and you realize how bad it's going to be. And then the guy you've learned to hate in the first 20 minutes to show the most throws up out of the blue. It's so good. It's all awful. It's just, you're trapped, and there's no way out, and it sustains that for 2 hours. I love the end of episode 2. It shouldn't work. It's such a cliche. But, man, as those lights just fail when those guys are in the water and then they just roll credits, It's so good. It's one of the best cliffhangers I have ever seen.
Mm-hmm.
And it's horrifying.
Mm-hmm.
I love the setup on this is so good that then they're allowed to do what they do for the next three episodes. It's so good. It's so good.
Yeah. So finally, to you, Aaron.
Five-way tie. Episode 1, 2, 3, 4, and 5, all equal participants in my favorite episode of Chernobyl. What do I say? I'm all flustered. The first episode is perfect. And then they bring in Jared Harris and Stellan Skarsgård.
Yes, exactly.
In episode two. And you're like, how do you improve on perfection? I don't know how to answer this question, but I have to agree with you that the moment that they pull out and the core is gone, it's just like it's the actual real time shot of everyone's stomach as they're watching it.
That is the money pit, shot. That really is it.
It's that pit in your stomach, and you're like, oh, that's what I'm feeling. How did they get it?
Well,
I'll
tell you, when I was rewatching it, my girlfriend passed through the living room, and she went, is that a nuclear reactor? What the hell are you watching? I said, this is Chernobyl. And she went, oh, my God, I'd forgotten this part. They did show it. And she's like, shit. Because she'd seen it when it first aired and really liked it, but she didn't know I was revisiting it yet. And you walk in right there and you're like, what? Because you know exactly what the hell you're looking at. There's no mistaking what that is. It is fantastic filmmaking. It really, really is. With that in mind, I'm going to go this way, and I'll ask you, Perry, which performance most affected you in this? And it can be one of the three leads, or it can be somebody else. But which one really got you the most?
I will answer your question, and then I'll give a different answer. But my answer is Jared Harris. Because I have always adored Jared Harris. I think Jared Harris is a spectacular actor who just is a spectacular actor.
Can I say he may even be a greater actor than his father?
He's a different actor than his father. They're both great. I love Richard Harris too. And I've been a Jared Harris fan since watching him play Andy Warhol. Like, that's the best Warhol I've ever seen, and I followed that career with pleasure. But this is going to be such a weird thing to say as someone who loves actors so much. It's kind of a genius of the film, right? Or the whole series. Everybody's perfect, right? There's nobody that stands out in a bad way. It's kind of a perfect Soviet cast. Everybody does their job to perfection. And I really don't. Like, you could pick it. I love that guy who played the head of the miners. He's fantastic. I love the little kid who has the short interaction with I forget the actress's name, on the bench. Like, even that's great. It's a throwaway moment, and it's fantastic. It stuck with me. It's great. You can't go wrong. You know, it's everybody's spectacular. But yeah, you make me say one, I'm going to say Jared Harris.
Yeah, and I just looked him up. That actor that played the head of the miners is Alex Burns.
Yeah.
He's done things like EastEnders, River City. He was in The Ghost in the Darkness back in the 90s. He was in the recent Batman you know, he's been in a lot of shows, Casualty, Well Under, Vera. Just he's been everywhere, and he's just one of those actors that you're like, yeah, I know the face, I don't know the name, but he always makes an impression.
Yeah.
Yeah, yeah. So what about you, Aaron? What performance really stands out the most for you or most affected you?
Well, I would be remiss if I didn't mention that, like, Skarsgård's performance was so good and the makeup was so good that I didn't realize it was him until, like, episode 4. I wasn't looking at the cast list or anything. I was just like, wait, is that Stellan Skarsgård? Like, I'd seen his name in the credits, and I've been trying to figure out where he was, and then it's like, holy crap. So he blew me away. Jared Harris also blew me away. I'm going to throw Paul Ritter a bone here, though, because Perry's right. Like, you absolutely hate this guy for the first half hour, and then, like, all of a sudden he's super sympathetic. And the performance he's giving there as, like, the lead guy in the nuclear power plant, like, our sympathy for that guy hinges on his performance. Like, he really makes us hate him, and then he really makes us feel bad for him. And he doesn't do anything different. You just realize how helpless he is to do anything. And it's a small role, relatively small role. It's kind of a thankless role, but it's also a pivotal role that he plays.
Yeah, he's in a way, he's one of the villains, but he's also maybe the first victim of Chernobyl.
Mm-hmm.
The first casualty. Mm-hmm. So, you, Hugh, who affected you the most?
I mean, you guys have covered all the important things. So, I mean, I'm just, the only thing I'm going to add to it is you know, it's the people you don't know so well who for me stand out. You know, we've talked about Alex Burns, who, by the way, I just discovered is in Andor, so that's another reason I need to watch Andor. But anyway, Kearns is great. Kearns is incredible and remarkable, and you're right, he's one of those guys. And he does so much with such a small moment, and that's huge. But you guys are right about the big names. You know, I mean, at this point, I've been watching Skarsgård now for nearly 30 years, I think, 25 years, something like that. I've been watching him.
Has he ever given a bad performance? I don't think so.
No. I think even if his tone is maybe not where you expect it to be for the film, it's still, but the performance, the ability to give the performance on camera is still unparalleled, and he's, you know, he's one of my favorites, and just he brings this was a new level. I wasn't expecting him to do, I don't know, I should know by now, it shouldn't surprise me, but nevertheless, it's just, yeah, amazing. Harris, incredible, absolutely incredible. So nice to see him moving away from some of the roles that have he gets pigeonholed as a villain or an antagonist to the prettier actors, and it's nice to see him do his thing and be as good as he is. But for me, because I adore her anyway as an actress, and I think she has a tall order with the playing a character who has to represent several real people. I think Emily Watson really does something that I haven't seen her do before. And she brings something special to what she's doing and the way she's giving us a way in to a particular set of views and ideas on the situation as well as on the politics. Because, you know, for all the negatives about Russia and its administration, especially by the time we get to this point in time, there is a historical tradition in the Soviet Union, despite all the defections throughout the Cold War, there was nevertheless a point made by many of the scientists, which was that at least there was a degree of respect, and they treated scientists like rock stars, in the same way that they treated chess players like rock stars. There's an appreciation of the intellect that you a lot of them found when they came over to the West was suddenly gone. That wasn't there. They were valued for other things, and I think. I think that's an important aspect to how their scientists behave and the way they're seen, and I think that's an important part of how what Watson brings to it. So,
yeah. So now I'm going to turn this one to Aaron and ask: is this a triumph of writing, production, directing, or acting?
How to answer this one? Yes. The only answer? I think Hugh mentioned the couple of wonky CG moments, and so I'm going to say that it's the least among equals, the production.
mm-hmm.
The casting is perfect. The writing, the fifth episode is basically a world science conference where they talk about nuclear meltdowns and math, and it's still one of the most compelling hours of TV ever made. So, yeah, you check mark on both writing and directing. On these things, a miniseries, I think it always helps when you have a singular vision. And it had one writer and it had one director, and I think that helps immensely that they were able to really bring a cohesive vision to the work and really put their stamp on it. What's really interesting is that the director is like a lifelong TV director. He's a guy who has done a lot of directing on television but hasn't done a lot of films. And to see that kind of like self-assured, like directorial stamp on it is really impressive, from a guy who really is working in a writer's medium and who doesn't get a chance to put like a visual stamp on something, most of the time. So, it had been written and directed by the same guy, I would hedge my bets and say that basically he's the winner. But he didn't, unfortunately. There was a writer and a director, and just choosing between those two things for me right now is just impossible. But I guess ultimately I will go with direction because of the tension that it maintained, even once the tension of the immediate tension should have been gone. They were able to keep you feeling like everything was at the brink for the entire time. And that's magnificent.
Extraordinary.
If panic attack inducing.
Perry, what about you?
I will steal Aaron's answer from a previous question. It's a four-way tie. But I'll answer your question anyway and land on I'm also going to go with the direction. And for this reason, I think that if you – I think there are moments I can point to that are less than perfect three moments, right? Not that anything's bad, not that anything fails, not that anything doesn't work, but if I'm going to nitpick, it's going to be like, I don't need that last scene between Skarsgård and Harris on the bench. Like, that's a real writerly moment, and I understand why it's there, and I love watching the actors do it, but it's like, well, I don't need that at this point. You've effectively told this story. I don't need that very, very sort of, you know, that's for the audience. And I could nitpick about the need to have the entire sequence where the young guy's got to go shoot puppies. I understand why it's there. It's totally effective. And this is what I'm saying. Like, for all the moments that I might be like, oh, that could have been just, I don't know that that was, you know, absolutely necessary. You never get that feeling of watching it because it's so well directed. You know, the director just pulls everything together at every moment and never lets go. So it's so well put together. So I will, and again, you know, a director doesn't know what to direct if they don't got something to write. And so if I'm crediting, I want to credit the writing because I remember what people do, not what they say in this show. And, you know, we tend to credit directors with that, but that's writers and that's actors. And that's why I will mistakenly say direction. You know, they're all perfect.
Well, you know, I probably would go with direction myself. I think it's a very finely written series. I think that it is, you know, an extraordinarily hacked series. But I don't know, even with this cast, that without a deft hand in charge of things and bring out the best of a very fine script, that we wouldn't have what we have. This is one of those rare instances in TV where the director makes an enormous difference. So yeah, for me, it's direction. Hugh, your turn.
So, okay, two things for me. We've talked about the acting already when we talked about the performances, so we know the acting works. I agree with Perry and Aaron. You can't, you know, this is across the board amazing. It all works together, but we've talked about the directors and the writers. I just want to bring up two things, okay? It isn't just Johan Rieck as a director who's, you know, who's relatively unknown or not a person you associate with feature films or certain types of quality of in this direction. I did not realize that Mazin, as a writer, wrote Scary Movie 3 and Scary Movie 4.
Yeah.
Wrote The Hangover sequel. Like, I did not know that's what he'd done. That's just blown my mind, finding that out in research for this podcast, right? That has blown my mind. So he goes from that, and then boom, here we are, right? He's doing this, and now he's doing, you know, Last of Us, and apparently he's got a 9/11 series in the works. And it's like, now, you know, I will follow this guy anywhere now, but I'm not going back. Right? However, Johan Rieck, right, as a director, this blows my mind again. Rieck in the 90s was a Swedish pop star called Sacha Bo, which you guys will not know, but they were big Euro pop stars. They were like hip hop electronic. I absolutely remember the hit singles. And there was Toddy Goofy. Like a European version of the Stereo MCs from the UK, and it was just, I can't believe that's the guy. Apparently he shot their music videos because they needed to save money. So other Swedish artists started coming to him. So he did like the Cardigans and all these other artists. So he was a huge music video director. So we can add him to the list of 90s video directors who suddenly, you know, been able to expand. He did do a feature, a debut feature that went to Sundance, but after that, he got stuck into television, as Aaron was saying. And again, it's really interesting because the feature at Sundance is what got him the gig on Breaking Bad. And it's just like, you look at this guy's trajectory and you're like, wait, you know, everyone else saw something that we didn't see. Do you know what I mean? Like Vince Gilligan saw something there that we never got to see, and so suddenly, you know, so when you look at the pathway, you realize, oh, okay, this was coming. You know, this guy had it in him. But you guys are absolutely right. You know, Mazin's writing is fantastic. Performances are incredible. Production detail is just riveting. You know, and it's also a very clever, even for the moments we've highlighted as not being, you know, perfect, that's fine. You know, perfection doesn't exist as far as I'm concerned. What's perfect is the thing that slows a few things that don't work. But there was something about the mood of it. It just felt intensely, I don't know how much of it has to do with the shoot, how much of it has to do with the careful application of CG to skies and backgrounds. But as somebody who's, you know, effectively a European, despite what the country I live in has done, I felt like this felt right. Everything looks right. Do you know what I mean? That's really huge for me. That's really important. And I think that comes from, you know, the decisions made by the producers to where to film it, who to cast, what to make it look like. I mean, Rank is definitely in the top league as far as I'm concerned now. And the fact that he had to drop out of shooting The Last of Us pilot, you know, it's a bit of a shame. And I'm kind of hoping that we'll see him do something again soon because, you know, we need his, if this is what he can do, we need so much more from him. But hey, you know, if this is all we get in the end, you know, it puts him on the map forever, you know?
True. So now the last question, the last big question of the night, and that is to you, Perry. Where do we rank this all time, both for miniseries and TV in general? I know that you just absolutely love rankings.
Like I said earlier, it's the greatest horror miniseries I've ever seen. I'm not joking.
No, it's fantastic. Yeah, are you there?
Yeah, I have nothing else to add. I mean, if you ask me to rank it in some way, that's what I'm going to tell you. I have never seen such an extended piece of horror, and that it all works, and that it's so much more than that too. It's not just that, but I can't remember the last time I was that horrified. I have no. I wasn't terrified. I wasn't scared. I was horrified.
Well, you know, it's interesting you mention horror. I wish I could find it, but I remember because, you know, he writes about things outside of straight up horror. But I remember back around the time this miniseries came out, Stephen King was trying to talk it up, and he was actually saying the same thing. He was like, "Hey, guys, ladies, gentlemen, folks, everybody." People, watch this. This is real life horror. This, if you think what I do is good, no. Watch this. What about you, Hugh? Where do we rank it?
You know, so we did Band of Brothers here on Cathedral. We did, you know, we've talked about miniseries before, and over the years I've given a lot of thought to the miniseries I remember seeing in the 80s and 90s, and well, even the 70s for that matter, you know, like Roots and Shogun, and even something as thrillery as Favorite Son, which I don't know if you guys remember, but introduced us. It had a spin-off series called Mancuso FBI, but which I really enjoyed for 2 years, with Robert Legere as an FBI agent. But the miniseries was a cracking piece of, like, you know, airport thrillers type stuff. I actually found the book the other day. I can actually see it from there. I was like, oh, I've still got it. So anyway, these things used to rank really high for me. You know, I used to really enjoy these one-offs, even if I got stuck into my long-running shows. Chernobyl's different, right? It just feels on another level completely. It just... You know, it doesn't feel like a miniseries. It feels like somebody opened a window back in time and we're staring in abject horror as Harry says of what's going on. And honestly, that has to put it in the top 5, top 10. You know, it's got to be in there. I mean, what, you know, Band of Brothers, we agreed last time, is definitely in the top 5. This has got to be there with it, right? Both as a piece of historical drama, as a reflection on the past, but also as a miniseries, as a functioning piece of drama with a beginning, a middle, and an end that gets in, does what it's got to do, and gets out, and does not waste its time.
No, it doesn't. It really, really doesn't. It is spectacular, and I did check. It is at currently 107. So it is right up there for me. It is one of my favorite shows. So now I guess you'll get to close this question out, Aaron. Where do you put it?
I have it at 32, but it's begging to go higher at the moment. I don't know if it will, but it really wants to. It's playing with me at the moment. It's probably because of all the glowing things we've just said over the last hour and a half. but it's sitting right around, right, it's sitting at 32, all things considered, right around the top 10, just outside the top 10 miniseries for me. But keeping in mind that several of the miniseries I have above it are like European art films that just happen to be 5 hours long. So, so like you take out Fanny and Alexander and the Decalogue and Berlin Alexanderplatz and some of the other stuff like that, all of a sudden you're looking at, like you said, like a top five miniseries that's actually made as a miniseries, not an auteur making a long movie that has to be broken up for budget reasons and time reasons and put onto television. So,
yeah, because no one's going to want to sit in a seat that long.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah. Yeah. No, it is phenomenal. Now, before we close this out, I have to do the housekeeping here for Deviant Legion and mention that tomorrow at 7 p.m., that is October 1st, 2022, we are starting Hispanic Appreciation Month with a commentary watch of Doctor of Doom. So join Carl and crew for that. I'm not going to be there. I've got no background with that movie, so I was not able to talk about it. But it does sound like a truly wickedly fucked up film, and lots of fun if you're into that sort of thing. Then on Sunday, Rock This Town Radio with TC is back with Boogie Woogie Jive and Jump, and that will be at 8 p.m. Now, Cathode Ray Mission is not going to be back next week, but we will return on the 14th of October. We are going to roughly a bi-weekly schedule. You may see occasionally that we will do two episodes back-to-back, but that's only to keep us on approximately a bi-weekly schedule. We are going to have two episodes in October, one on the 14th and one 2 weeks after that on the 28th. And our episode in 2 weeks is going to be on the original Outer Limits, an episode that I've been planning almost as long as I was planning the Star Trek episode last week. So it's about damn time we get this thing in the can. Really looking forward to talking about that that landmark show. It's gonna be a great conversation. That said, I want to turn back to you guys and ask the question I always ask, and that is there anything with this series that we haven't covered yet that you'd like to discuss real quick? Hugh, is there anything that we haven't brought up yet that you'd like to get to real quick?
No, I don't think so. I think, we covered the history, covered being there. Yeah, no, I think everything is that. I mean, we haven't mentioned the music, which is kind of interesting, but again, you know, it's just... I think the other thing we haven't mentioned, given the predominance of Scandinavian people involved in the productions, we haven't mentioned the influence of modern Scandinavian television on this, but since you're planning on doing The Killing fairly soon, I might save that for The Killing podcast and reference
back. Oh, that'll be something to discuss when we get to that episode in a few months. Yes, folks,
okay.
We are planning a look at the original Danish version of The Killing for Brittleson is coming up in a few months. We'll make a formal announcement at the right time. But, yes, that's going to be a lot of fun. What a wonderful series. So what about you, Perry? Anything that you want to bring up real quick that we haven't gotten to?
I'll say one last thing, and it's about the very end of the whole thing. What undoes so many pieces of, you know, anything based on real life is when, you know, you end with the footage of the real people. That's always, always a mistake. It's always a mistake. Like, you know, Angela Bassett's wonderful, and she's not Tina Turner, and you realize that when you see Tina Turner. You know, it's a problem.
Yep.
And I don't know how, but this utterly doesn't do that. I don't know if it's because they just sort of, you know, not fess up is an incredibly inappropriate choice of words here. You know, they point out where, this is what we changed a little bit. This is, you know, this is what really happened. I don't want you to get the wrong idea that other things might have happened. I think that's really smart. I will, the very last words that come up in the series, remember, it's the official Soviet death toll. And I thought, I had a number in my head that I thought was ridiculously and appropriately Soviet low in my head that I thought was going to pop up, and the number that popped up was smaller than that. And that was the great last sort of nail in the coffin for how genius this show was.
Mm-hmm.
For all of that,
I
overestimated what the Soviets would admit to. It's so good. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yep. So finally to you, Aaron, anything that you want to mention before we get going?
I think we have it covered.
You know, I'm just surprised that you didn't mention, you know, six seasons in a movie.
Six seasons in a movie. But this would be the worst six seasons in a movie ever. Like, I would watch every second of it, but it would be horrible.
Yeah, but folks, for those not in the know, that is a reference to a favorite here on Cathode Ray Mission, which is the sitcom Community, which they always joked that there were going to be six seasons and a movie. We got the six seasons. We haven't got the movie yet, but they announced today that they are officially going ahead with the movie. It's in production, and the fans are excited. So that's where that comes from. So, with that, I just want to, as always, thank you guys for coming on. Thank everybody out there for listening. You know, this was great. This wraps up also our third year anniversary month, which began a long month with a look at Better Call Saul, and we did some different stuff this month. We did some stuff where we looked at shows that ended a week before or the few days before. We looked at a show that had dropped in its entirety just a few weeks earlier. You know, I'm always looking to try to do a few new wrinkles here and there in the show and hopefully keep injecting a little new blood into the show so things don't get stale. You know, I want to serve both the audience and keep the guests happy, and hopefully this works. Hopefully you guys and gals and everyone else enjoy what we're doing here, because we really couldn't keep doing it without everyone's participation. And we do it for fun. We do it so that you have something to enjoy, hopefully. And with that, I just want to say that I think it is time to head off, and we will see you all again in 2 weeks. So on the count of three, we'll say goodnight. One, two, three. Good night.
Good night.
Good night.
Good night.